Bring a Trailer podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bring a Trailer podcast. Alex here, director of Auction Production. I'm joined full house today, actually, here in the little upstairs Bring a Trailer podcast studio. Joined by Zach, head of, I'm screwing up your title.
Head of something.
Is he in charge of something? I don't know if he is.
I have a head.
He does have a head. Director of Auction Strategy. How are you, Zach?
I'm good. I'm still a little jet lagged. We'll get into that a bit.
Yeah, everyone's back from trips. I'm excited to talk about that. The salty voice that cut in there is Howard Swig, head of auctions. He's head of something too. How are you, Howard?
It's great to be here for an all new edition of the podcast. We've all had some crazy adventures the last week or two, so glad we can circle up and chat about it.
And a rare adventure to San Francisco for you.
I mean, you guys have been doing all sorts of crazy stuff. I was just driving around Southern California for a few days and now back in SF. So pretty tame compared to the rest of you, but we can get into all that.
Last but not least, hasn't made any salty comments yet. Randy Nottenberg over here in the corner, co-founder, our president, our fearless leader. How are you, Randy?
I'm good. I'm just scrolling BAT while you guys are bickering about who knows what.
I'm looking
at an LFA at the moment. I'm looking at a career RS at the moment. Anyway, there's some goodness.
We've had a hot LFA streak, Zach, some good ones coming through.
I know. I was really hoping we'd see those hit a bottom sometime soon, but I think
they seem like they're on an upward trajectory, though.
I won't hold my breath for it.
Yeah. Okay. Not like an NSXR.
Not even a humble brag. We have a real traffic jam for second gen 4 GTs right now, and they're all so awesome, and I love them, but we have a guy who's been in line for a while, and I've told him yours is next, and I thought I did an adequate job checking the pipeline, but we had the yellow one, then boom, we got another yellow one that just popped up. So it's great that we list those, but
well, hopefully assembly line of those come through right now, and we can actually tell him yours is next.
Don't make any promises. Don't commit
fewer
to nothing.
LFAs than second gen 4 GTs, but just by a hair.
Heritage Edition ones are good. You like those, Randy? The ones that are kind of painted like the 64, 65 car?
I'm more into the non-heritage 4 GTs, both on the early ones and the late ones. I know you get like double the money or whatever for the Gulf colors, but
maybe it's not heritage. What's the one called that looks that's like white with the black nose that looks like the early GT40s? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about. They have
second
a number on the
heritage door,
and it,
that's the 20. Yeah. There's a different heritage livery for every.
Okay, that's what it is.
64 to 68 heritage each year.
Right, 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 right.
I think that's 17 or 18. Is the white and black livery?
We've had a couple of those.
I'm a cheapskate. I just want like base spec, or maybe no stripes. Like I don't need carbon anything in my life. I'm just like the cheapskate 4 GT dude,
yeah, totally.
But I get that those special editions bring all the attention and all the bids, apparently.
Normally, I'm not wild about all the stickers and all that stuff, but I do like that kind of off-white color that they're, you know, it's all those Ford, you know, all the Shelby cars had that great color. So like Howard said, we're all recently back from various trips of varying lengths and to different continents and across different oceans and various things. Should we start furthest away and work backwards, or what do you want to do?
You were in SoCal at the Porsche.
In SoCal. I did the most boring thing, so maybe we can talk about mine last. Howard was on the Cal Mille, which we talked about in a previous podcast, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I was in Japan driving some cars around.
Some cars nobody else can touch that are amazing that we want to hear about.
So and Randy, you were on quite an adventure too. You went the opposite way from Zach. He went west and you went east.
Yeah, Zach and I were far away. I was in Europe and got to go to the start of the Tour Auto, which is a dream event. And one of the old school BAT podcasts, Howard and I said, like, what's an event we'd love to do? And we both called that out. And so I went to the start. I didn't participate. I was the dude strolling the halls, looking at everyone else's cars, but pretty inspiring and pretty cool. And then, yeah, cruised around Europe and drove a couple cars and saw some cool stuff.
Give the primer on that one. I actually don't know very much about that event.
The Tour Auto is, long-standing, used to be called the Tour de France Auto. Now there's the modern version of it. It's a 3-, 4-, 5-day event across France. This year it was from Paris to Biarritz on the coast. They hit racetracks. There's a race group. There's a regularity rally group. There were 230 cars, and they're cars that you never see, you know, unusual stuff over there. Heavy motorsport inspiration because of the track stuff that most of the cars do. But I was pleased to see that there are street spec cars that are there for the sort of rally component. So I could actually get into that. I'm not a huge track, like helmeted up race driver like some of you guys are, but could potentially take a slightly modified street car and go do the event, which I would like to do next year or the year after. So we'll see what happens.
But we've all been to a number of the U.S. road rallies, but the Tour Auto and stuff like that, it's a little extra level of fanfare and excitement. And that's kind of couple notches up from U.S. stuff we're doing on this side of the ocean.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not too many regularity ones in the U.S. like at all. There's a couple, you know, there's that one in Oregon that I did. But the folks over there, yeah, like, you know, route books that are super serious and point scoring and competition and stuff like that. And you can do that. That's how the Targa Florio was too. So there's a lot of that. And people run this circuit and do a dozen of those a year and they take it super seriously. And then there's some folks that can kind of lighten up a little bit and just kind of drive the route. That's what I would be into. And then there's like, yeah, track competition. It's for speed. So it's kind of all levels. And I'm interested in sort of climbing into the most junior level. But the cars are what really fired me up. You know, heavy Porsche contingent, heavy Alpine A110 and A310 contingent, a bunch of Alphas, you know, Gullwing, some pretty heavy stuff that, and some Mustangs. I was telling you that they like American cars. They think American cars are cool. In France. So I always trip across American cars over there. So anyway, we have a lot of customers over there and interesting BAT cars that are floating around. And so people wanted to talk about BAT and that always fires me up.
Oh, that's great. A single favorite car over there?
Single favorite. Honestly, the 65 Mustang Notch that was over there that said like Ford of France, that's kind of my Falcon is kind of in that flavor. I thought that was super cool, but I'm a big 356A guy, as you know, and there were two speedsters with hard tops, glass bar hard tops on them, which is kind of cool. There were a few open cars. There was a Healey 100S. We talked to the driver of that. An American guy was co-driving that, who was a cool dude. Yeah, so that, I mean, all sorts of stuff. I can list off. I mean, man, there were so many good cars. So there was an Auto Vua Zagato body Fiat, which was super pretty. And then I showed you a picture of Moretti, right?
I couldn't even quite identify what that was.
Super cool. Super pretty. So there's some esoteric stuff. And then Alex is like, where's the 308 Group 4 race cars? Oh, yeah,
there were a bunch of those.
There's four of those. So anyway, cool. Very cool car.
Super cool stuff. Are there people lining the streets at this? Is this like the Miele in Italy at all?
On parts of it. And at the start, it was like there was this cocktail party around all the cars and there was hundreds of people, right? I mean, there's like people that are really into it as a spectator type thing. It's kind of a French sort of pride thing,
right?
The Tour Auto, right? It's like the Tour de France bike race or whatever. Not quite as big in scale, but I was pleased to see that people are just generally stoked on this event happening. And it was a little bit displaced this year because of the Olympics. So the beautiful place always usually started is being built out for Olympics this summer, but they did it in another spot. So anyway, it was fun.
As luck would have it, one of my favorite cars on the Camille last week was this delightful little Moretti 750 Coupe, one of four or five, some millimilia spec deal. But man, I think a lot of the European guys who run Toro Auto on those events, if they came and did the Colorado Grand or Camille, I think they'd get to the end of the day and be like, all right, like, what are we doing for the second half of the day? Like, I'm ready to go. Especially if you're doing the competition. They're like in a driver's seat the whole day. You drive a couple of miles and you maybe do like three or four 10-lap races and drive to the next deal. Like, it's, you definitely get your fill of behind the wheel experience.
Totally. I'm at my hotel and there's guys in the hotel eating hotel breakfast in driver's suit. And I was like, whoa, dude, like, awesome. What are you driving? And these guys are in Cobras and stuff getting ready to go. It's totally crazy.
Did I get that right? That this is the descendant of the Tour de France?
Correct.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. So that makes sense. It's the TDF, the Ferrari TDF.
It's what the Ferrari is named for, all that sort of stuff. Yep. So obviously it has evolved and changed over the years and the routes and such, but it's taken seriously by some and it's just good fun for others. But it's cool that they embrace spectator. Like, I'm a just random overseas dude that shows up and wants to see what it's about and was able to check it out, which was invigorating and exciting for me, something I'd never done before.
Would you want to do an event like that, Zach?
I'd love to. Like, at the invite next year, we'll see.
Co-driver in an open Healey, maybe?
No, I mean, Zach owned an early 911 and is fast on track. I mean, there was probably 25 non-ducktail, interesting spec, track-oriented 911s, and people are out there ripping them. And that seems like a great... I heard it's a little tough to get in with one of those because there's so many of them, but that's like a no-brainer way to go and drive fast and get on track over there, right?
Oh, so. Well, that's such a good segue into what Alex did. Too many 911s.
We had 20. How many did you see, Alex?
I am curious. What would you want to roll on that event?
I mean, it kind of depends. I mean, those 308s were pretty good. It kind of depends what. So is the racing class like wide open? Is it like as fast as you can go?
There's a GT40. Wow. There's Cobras.
But is it like closed? It's not like because the Miele is on open like roads with traffic on them, right?
You do stages pretty quick and different sort of time stages on public roads. But then you get to actual tracks where you're timed on track. I think four different racetracks they were doing.
the amount of driving every day is insanity.
That's pretty cool.
In a great way.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. I think, Zach, it would be fun to be in something that would be like a semi-comp car to get to drive those on the street between the stages. It's a little bit of a throwback, right, to the era when you drive your race car to the track and then race it and then drive it home again. So I think that would be fun. How
about an M1 Pro car?
There you go. Perfect. Oh, man. That would be pretty solid.
They had those, and RS is obviously 2.7 RS is like a lot of people have those cars, and RSR spec, that sort of stuff would be amazing on those roads.
Yeah.
Zach, having just returned from your second trip to Japan, do you feel you're just a pro at driving right-hand drive cars, or you're fully comfortable now?
It always takes some getting used to. Yeah, I definitely would not say I'm a pro at right-hand drive. Yeah, for many reasons. But after like day 3 or 4 driving right-hand drive, it comes to you for sure. I still don't feel like quite as confident in general. The second gear shift is like never as crisp and satisfying as left-hand drive.
Zach drove some cool cars. I don't know if he wants to share all the stuff he was driving around, but you drove a Tommy Kaira. Is that correct?
I did drive a Tommy Kaira. Yeah.
I don't know anything about those. We've listed like 2 of those, and I just kind of read it a little bit and I'm like, what the heck is
going on? I'm not even exactly sure what they are either.
But I haven't gone deep on those to even figure out what's happening.
That's the Elise looking thing? That little tiny, is that what it is?
The 2-sentence elevator pitch on what is that car and why is it named after some dude?
Man, I actually wish I knew the history behind the company a little bit better.
Howard's laughing. He's like, we didn't prep him for that at all. Pull up a listing.
No, but you drove one. I mean, you know what it's about? I have no idea.
I mean, the original philosophy behind it is like similar to the Lotus Elise philosophy of a lightweight, stripped down car for the road that's bare bones. It uses an SR20 Nissan engine. So that was in the, we got the G20 here, we got the 240SX, but it's got carburetors because Tommy Kaira thinks that adds to like a more raw and realistic driving experience.
But hold on, so, you say Tommy Kaira. So that you're like the company Tommy Kaira or the dude?
Correct.
Like who and what is this?
I guess I say it in the sense of the company, but again, like I don't know the history behind Mr. Tommy himself.
Japanese tuner, the Tommy Kaira. ZZ the model?
ZZ is the model, yeah. They tuned some cars in period, but this is like a production car.
Is it their only thing that they actually made from the ground up?
They made those, I think, from 97 or 98 to 01, and then they did a reissue that looks a lot more modern in 2010 or so. So, yeah, there's a lot of quirks. To start it, it requires 100 foot-to-the-floor pumps.
No.
Yes.
What?
Yes. It's
the one you drove required that.
No, but that's actually, that was instructions from the factory.
That's not in our listing of the one we had. It's not disclosed.
Yeah, we'll see when that video starts.
What in the
that's
world?
To prime it?
Yeah, it's a carbureted SR20. So startup's pretty wild. Yeah, once you get in it, it's properly fast. It sounds sick. It is really stripped down, but it's not as uncomfortable as you'd think. It cruises just fine. It's got the linkage like a Spyker C8 kind of, where it's all exposed. It's like a poor man C8 in there. It's not all blinged out. It's not chrome, but you see all the shifting rods, and it's pretty cool. Yeah, the gauges are like haphazardly laid out, but yeah, it's fun. It's fast.
It's like an S2000 or it's like a Renault Sport Spider.
It's like a Renault Sport Spider.
Okay.
But it's like a Renault Sport Spider with like it feels like an old car. It doesn't feel like something from the 90s. It feels like a car more like from the 70s. It feels pretty solid and stiff, but with that motor and how unassisted both the steering and all the pedals and inputs feel, it doesn't feel like a modern car. It's pretty quick. It handles pretty well. I may or may not have had a spin in it.
Ooh,
wow.
Zach.
On a public road.
Yeah.
What happened, man?
We'll get into that later and maybe on another episode. But I would have said it was very confidence-inspiring. And that's why I laughed when you said, how comfortable with right-hand drive are you? And I don't think I can say at liberty I'm the most comfortable if that happened.
Okay, the SR20 was a little much for you, it sounded like.
Yeah, wet day, surface transition. I'm sure that
right-hand drive spin, like all your instincts are wrong.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
You like try to save it and you do everything wrong? Or did you have a chance?
No, it was gone. I mean,
you had no chance.
Yeah, it was a slick surface transition.
Transition, it makes it sound like it was less boneheaded than it was. I like that. I'm going to start using that. That's transition surface.
I'm going to save a little bit of
the car was in transition, and it just went all the way around.
I didn't check the date code, but the tires made a play to factor. But yes, I'm sure there's a much driver error involved there. So
rain is more slippery than American rain.
Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you were getting your money's worth, Zach. Let's put it that way. That makes me happy.
Yeah, I'm going to find out how much money, how much I'm paying for this experience. Yeah, I may or may not own a Tommy Cavalier at this point.
Oh, it's unclear.
But yeah, the car was good.
What were the other driving highlights?
Honda S660 Roadster, awesome. Everything you'd hoped and dreamed it would be. Probably one of the best shifter feels of any modern car ever driven.
But a little tiny motor in that, right? Like 70 horsepower, something like that?
The one I drove was modified by Spoon. So I think it had 80 horsepower. and it, yeah, it weighs like 300 pounds.
I love it.
It's like one cylinder I'm from Randy's Falcon.
The most stoked to hear about that car more than all the other ones. Cool. Because I can envision it. I know what it looks like and I like them. And I read some when they came out and I think it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, they look rad. It's surprisingly roomy.
Interesting.
Like, I thought I was going to be max hype for it, but I almost felt like I had more room in that than an S2000. I didn't feel cramped at all. It rode really well.
It's a turbo 3 or a turbo 4?
It's a turbo 3, okay. 600 and some change. I think it is.
So is that like a next generation Honda Beat? Like, what year is that?
Correct.
Yeah, I have a bunch of shots of it next to a Beat. It's pretty cool. I mean, it looks kind of like a Beat meets the modern NSX. So it's got like these big buttresses behind it. But yeah, it's revy. The gearing almost feels kind of tall in it, which made me laugh. But it cruises well as a result. The steering is honestly not great. But other than that, everything was phenomenal about it.
And you drove that quite a bit?
Yeah, I put some miles. I drove that from Tokyo out in the countryside. And on the drive out, that's almost like the best part. It's like Hakkasuka. There was a DB5 just cruising around. And there's all these other tuner cars out
just
there.
Just randomly? Skylines. Or this was some sort of event? You run into a Hakko just driving around?
Cruising around. Yeah, a lot of late model Ferraris.
Wow.
There's some
heavy because hitters. Of the road, like you're going on the equivalent of the Angeles Crest or something? Or no, this is just...
This is on the freeway.
Dude.
Honestly, driving back roads in the country in Japan... You don't want to be anything larger than a K car. It's too big. The roads are so small and narrow. So had I been in like an R34 Skyline, I think I would have felt like it was a little clunky on those back roads. Yeah, I drove a Jimny, which was sweet.
Oh, that's cool. There's a bunch of different generations of those, right? What era?
The modern super boxy ones.
Oh, okay.
Like a little rugged. I mean, great car. If they sold them in the US, I think in small cities everywhere it'd be a
I've heard people
success.
Say they wish they brought those here before.
Mm.
But if you're a guy living in America who's into cars and you go to Japan, it just must feel like a whole nother universe. Everything you're seeing on the road and just the whole energy of the whole deal.
Yeah, there's such a scene around it. The thing that blew me away is all the subcultures. Like there's a lot of supercars, but there's also a huge vintage car scene there.
You sent me that 32 Ford last time you were there. There was somebody driving around a 32 Ford in Tokyo.
That's pretty cool.
I know it was a three window coupe. It was sick.
That was at the Dais in Shibuya. Yeah. So there's supercar scene. There's also all these just wild tuner cars that we don't even see in the US. Like, I wish I remembered the name. People modify kind of like 80s boxy American cars, almost like a Monte Carlo SS, but it'll be slammed with a pink aero kit and then have exhaust tips that are like taller
8 feet
than
tall.
Your head.
Yeah, that whole scene.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that exists at all
that
in America.
Doesn't, no,
so sure you not. See stuff like that blowing by, and then it's
there's the weird Dodge vans that are lowered too. Mm-hmm. I've read about that.
Yeah,
there's places where people like drift those around.
But yeah, Honda N-boxes. It's just all this crazy mesh of it all, and good European cars that we don't get here. You know, C63 wagons and interesting Alphas, and because of the laws and standards over there, every car is super well maintained.
Right.
So everything you come across is in like perfect shape.
Somehow my car I got from Japan did not qualify. somehow it slipped through the cracks.
Well, that's why it's honestly why you see so many cars imported out of there. I mean, many are held to a really high standard, but the ones that aren't, they can't register. So
yeah, interesting.
Get them out. Sell them to Randy Nottenberg.
25 years, ship them over here for sure.
And also the cityscape itself is just the perfect backdrop for photographing cars in general. Just Japan is so beautiful out in the country and the cities. So it's a real place to be a car enthusiast for sure.
I hope you don't mind me outing you on this one, but when you went the first time, you came back and you were like, the third gen Prius makes, I think about this every time I see one, you're like, the third gen Prius, the styling on it makes more sense when you're in Japan.
Yeah.
Which I think about
a lot. Of Lexus's design language. It just works. I came back being really excited about the GR86, like what Robert rolls. Uh-huh. They just look so cool cruising around the city. New York has this a little bit too. When you're walking around and you just see even like a base 911, all of a sudden we're so desensitized here in California. You're like, oh, wow, that looks like a proper sports car the way it, your eyes kind of glaze over here.
Talk to us about gas station food and beverage options in Japan. It's well, pretty impressive, right?
That's hard-hitting questions.
That's what people want to know about.
Yep. Real highlight of the trip, the snacks for sure. And the Japan gut I got going on after 7-Elevens at 3 a.m. I mean, the ramen stalls, 24 hours, just being able to go after a late night and fill up on a hot bowl of ramen is solid. But yeah, 7-Eleven is, it's way more of a thing there than it is here. It's what I would say a little higher end. It's not all just hot dogs kind of rolling in that one thing that you know you're going to get botulism from. So yeah, you can like buy smoothies, but they're blended right there. So you go and you pick out the fruit out of the refrigerator, you ring it up at the cash register, and then you put it in the blender right there and get like a frozen fruit smoothie. That was cool. Tons of just weird JDM snacks, pineapple breads, and mochi.
And it's all 7-Eleven branded? Like that's where you go? Or there's their version?
7-Eleven branded. It's a Japanese company. So, and they also have Family Mart, which we don't have here in the U.S., which has the most satisfying door chime when you walk in. There's okay. also Lawson's, which is more geared towards snacks and treats than just kind of everything. But
Lawson sounds like it's founded in Tacoma, Washington.
Totally.
Like, what is that doing over there?
After you looped the Tommy Kyra, you were so happy to walk into the Family Mart.
Into the Lawson's.
Get some JDM snacks.
Yeah.
Is this in Tokyo only or is this out on the road too?
It's everywhere. There's not traditional grocery stores like the U.S. Like there are, but they're much farther and fewer between. Pretty much everyone just gets a snack at the conveni.
Sure. And you go to the vegetable market, the meat market, and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, there's more of that. But I mean, 7-Eleven, there's like solid sushi there.
Wow.
There's good fried chicken.
7-Eleven sushi.
So, I mean, sounds I'm so immediately risky. Dubious.
Oh, it sounds so risky. But over there, I bet Japan, it's amazing.
It's totally different.
I'm ready.
Any other highlights, Zach? Any other places that you went that were, what's the weather like in April? Is it cherry blossom?
There are some blossoms. There's some rain. Back to my other story. But everything's in bloom.
Inconsistent surfacing of roads.
Yeah. I drove my Skyline around. That was cool.
Oh, how was that?
It was fine.
It exists. That's a win. Chalk that up in the W column.
You've got the full ownership experience already. You're done with it.
Exactly. But no, I think just being there, soaking it in, seeing the sight sounds and cars, that's kind of what it's all about.
Each time you go a little bit longer, pretty soon it's going to be like Howard with New York. You just won't come back.
Yeah, I was scheming on it for a little bit.
Tokyo Redfin.
Tokyo Redfin, BAT Tokyo office. Let's go.
Yeah, that's right. It's the next logical step.
Mm-hmm. If you were let loose to drive around downtown Tokyo, would you lose your mind? Or that's pretty approachable?
I drove from... So like Shinjuku to Ginza, like inner city, I don't know, you're driving from like JFK into Manhattan.
But no English on the road signs, or there is English?
There's English around, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, most road signs have English as well.
Gotcha.
Zach probably utilized his patented technique of holding his phone while he shifts. Or actually, would it be the other way? You have to hold your phone with your left hand.
Yeah, I would be right hand and then knee steering wheel and then shift left. So that's actually advantageous for maps.
That's perfect. Better. That's perfect. Yeah. Fantastic. Randy, you mentioned that you visited a new car of yours too, which was complete news to me. Are you prepared to give the people the details on that?
Is that news? Yeah.
It was news to me. Did you guys know that he bought that car?
News to me.
The Falcon? Yeah.
I got a 64 Falcon in the Netherlands to go drive around over there. And it was my first time seeing it. And it was, interestingly, some of the same people. It was 11 years ago that we did the Blue Alpha in the Netherlands in this same zone.
Shot that's downstairs with you in the carousel at
Nürburgring. Famous shot on the BAT at the Nürburgring. And that was 11 years ago. And the shop we took that to outside of Amsterdam to get the suspension dialed in before we went to the Nürburgring. And I mounted tires and put the wheels on and did the whole thing. He raced Falcons and GTAs. So those were his two models.
Whoa.
So we went back and saw him with my Falcon, 64 Falcon, which he dug. Great guy named Case who helped me set up the car. And he was very excited. He has a big American CEES. That's how you say that.
Okay.
And he has a big American flag in his shop and he has since sold his Falcon. So he was excited to see the 64 Falcon. But no, they like American cars over there. Falcons were campaigned over there, maybe even more than Mustangs in motorsport. And so they love that model. And this car went, it's a SoCal car, black plate car that went to the UK and was built by Alan Mann and then was sold to a guy in the Netherlands that was a really nice guy who I got to meet, who I had only emailed with, who runs Octane Magazine over there. And he had a cool Falcon. And his buddies have some Galaxies that they bought on BAT. So there's like a Ford contingent over there. And anyway, I bought a red Falcon Sprint, red interior, 260 four-speed torque thrusts, cool little car, and just going to rip it around over there and try to take it to a couple of events and relive 11 years ago in the Alpha. I didn't want to do it with another Alpha.
Still a two-barrel on the 260?
No, it's funny. It's an Edelbrock four-barrel, but the guys over there all call it a Weber.
Oh, right. Because they do say Weber. They say Weber on them sometimes.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. And so they're like, what kind of carbs does it have? And they're like, it has a Weber. I'm like, on a small block Ford, no, it doesn't. Right? And they're like, yeah, it's a Weber.
It does.
And it is.
It trips up our editor sometimes.
Is that right?
Well, because you'll look for the branding on the carburetor. It says Weber. But it's like, clearly that's a Performer.
Edelbrock, it's totally right? Edelbrock, yeah. Performer, yeah. Summit Racing, like catalog buy. Right? Uh-huh. And so anyway, so that was interesting, but it ran great. And yeah, I had a ton of fun.
Man, talk about finding your calling in life. Case decides, I'm going to do Falcons and GTAs. And dude, that's it. What's
up? Raced them, and he's awesome at it. And he knows both those cars super well. What a great couple of choices.
I mean, Dutch mechanic named Case Racing. I mean, is he like the transporter on the side?
No,
like,
no, it's funny you say that. That's what he does. Yeah. He drives cars around, and he raced these cool cars. And he's just a great, great dude and very helpful to me with Alpha. And I met two other guys that I had met 11 years ago there that were like, oh, you're back doing another car. And they're like, what was that, 3-4 years ago? And I was like, that was 11 years ago. So anyway, long time coming to get another car. I shouldn't wait another 11 before buying another car.
Well, and maybe you shouldn't buy another car you already own now that you're onto two Falcons and two FJ40s.
Dude, but you got to get one to run. Somehow I got to get one of them to run at any one time. So they are, yeah, I'm pulling up duplicates on a couple of these. But 64 Falcon was actually the dream before the 63 in the U.S. found me. So
that's interesting.
The office can't handle another Chrysler 300B. Okay.
Two of them? I've actually thought. I've been shopping them.
Oh, man, did you see the F that's live?
Yeah, that's your jam. I did see it, and I immediately
looked
in the background
away
to see if there was a 56 behind it, which there was not.
Did you drive the Falcon a fair amount when you were there?
2 days worth. Yeah. Drove it in the rain a little bit, drove it around some very narrow roads, drove on some Dutch levees where you're like elevated. There's water both sides, and it's a one lane road with oncoming traffic.
Whoa.
So that felt super vulnerable multiple times. But it's a great, could bring it back here, but it's made the whole trip over there. It's so rare over there.
Totally.
Like a SoCal car built up and dialed in and totally over there. Might as well leave it there.
I mean, Zach, speaking of like coming across something in a place you don't expect it, right? Where it can kind of change how you think about a car, right? When you see something that's out of the ordinary, which I like, right? Stumbling across something that's strange in its environment.
I know, that's back to the earlier question I posed to you, what you'd want to roll in that event. I mean, GT40, M1 Pro car.
Yeah.
The correct answer is rolling a GT350 around, because it is, I don't know, it's just cool to be a little like disruptive over there and something you don't see as much.
100%. Yeah. The American, I mean, every time I watch Goodwood and you see the mini touring cars racing against the Galaxies, I'm like, give me that Galaxy. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. You know what
Black
I mean?
Black Galaxy.
Yeah.
I think driving a Ford GT, an 05, 06 Ford GT in Europe is like,
oh, interesting,
the craziest move.
Totally.
I think it's totally crazy.
Jeremy Clarkson had one, I think. He was a big fan of that car.
It's just a really unusual car to have over there. And anyway, I think that would be.
Have you ever seen one there?
I've seen a couple for sale and a couple in a showroom. I've never seen them driven around much.
Super cool. All right, Howard, your turn. How did the Alpha do on the Cal Mille?
No, I love it. Yeah, 06 Mustang looks a little different in the Netherlands than it does sitting in South Central LA. Mm-hmm. The Mille was good. Our Alpha, not so good.
Ooh.
We had some issues with that, so it didn't make it very far. But yeah, compared to Zach and Randy, I had a pretty tame week in comparison. The route was fantastic. I saw a lot of parts of California that I had not seen before. East of San Diego, driving out towards the Salton Sea. We had lunch one day at Lake Arrowhead, which is a Alex, you probably know this given your roots. It was killer. Went to Palm Springs for two nights. Had my first experience at Thermal Club.
Oh,
which is very, very cool.
So they didn't take you to Bombay Beach for lunch?
No, where's that?
Salton Sea.
Good
spot. Yeah, opposite end of the Pace Spectrum.
Yeah, totally.
Well, at a certain time, someone had the bright idea. They thought Salton Sea was going to be the next Vegas, and I guess they quickly realized that was not in the cards. But anyways, yeah, that wrapped up in LA last Thursday and it was great.
A little brawly El Centro. Did you hit any of those spots?
Man, 1,120 miles, I think, was the final count. So we covered some ground. A lot of 300 SLs, a lot of 356s. Two guys brought their Cal Spiders, some cool Aurelia B20s, Brave Soul, and a Duesenberg, a couple pre-war cars. So, yeah, kind of standard stuff.
What happened to the Alpha?
Oh, man. Well, we thought 2 years was an adequate runway to prepare the car, but sure enough, maybe should have been three. So that was disappointing, but... you know, it was 95 degrees for most of the event, so I was not too upset to be in air-conditioned comfort. Although I did have my first experience driving a 58 Beetle when the participants let us take his car for a few hundred miles. I don't know that I need to buy a Beetle, but it was kind of fun.
That's interesting.
You dodged that question really good. What happened to the Alpha, man? Compression?
He dodged it twice, Randy. Line? I don't know if you clocked that.
Well, the car had, did you have a spin? The car,
there was some uneven,
you can say no comment. Dude, you can say no comment. You can say no comment.
Chris can edit this out.
The car, no, it's fine. The car had been sitting for about 15 years. We sent it to a great guy, kind of 1900 expert, for kind of a full 15-year service, get the car up and running.
That's so harsh. Yeah, before the event, huh? Just stress.
And no shakedown, really, right? You took it straight to the event, right?
Well, the idea was 2 years would be adequate to get the car fixed up. And then we said he'll go drive it a couple hundred miles. And so he did a ton of great work to the car, got it running well. I guess he didn't do anything with the gas tank. So the first time he filled it up more than halfway, I guess there was some rust in the tank that kind of got dislodged and was clogging up the pickup. In his defense, he said, I drove it a couple hundred miles. I was looking at the fuel filter. It was all clean. And then he filled it up some amount and drove it the next time. And the car was dying. So we literally landed and the car was kind of dead on arrival. So that wasn't great. But maybe we'll get that car back in the next few weeks and it will be ready for the Cal Melee next year.
Yeah, that sounds solid. That had to be a disappointment. Sorry about that. But you cruised around and got to do the route and got to drive a 58 Beetle.
We did. And we were messing around with some other people's cars. So people are super generous in that event with letting you swap in and out. So yeah, it was good.
East of San Diego is cool. It's a cool area to drive around. Do you remember the names of any of the highways out there? There's a couple that are supposed to be really great.
Oh, man. Highway 78 is a great remote stretch of road between kind of Torrey Pines and the Salton Sea. Driving around S2, which is kind of southeast of Palm Springs. But yeah, honestly, uncharted territory for me. They did an awesome job with the route. A really nice road surface, no crazy dirt or rough road or anything. So somehow they found roads that were very, very suitable for this era of cars driving around there.
Awesome, man. Yeah.
That's you fantastic. Inspired to ever put an event together again? I know you love driving around the desert like that. You had said at one point, oh, we're going to do a point to point. Who knows where Nevada desert?
Whatever. Well, my old man did the La Carrera Nevada, which would be the one event I'd probably would have a very passive interest in reviving. But no, I'm actually uninspired to organize more car rallies is the truth.
It's the opposite. But
being a participant on rallies other people organize is delightful.
Mm-hmm. He was patting himself on the back. It's like, great move that I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. What was that? I never heard of that event your dad did in Nevada. That's cool. Was it like a full semi recreation of the Panamericana? Was that the idea?
It was. My dad went to Mexico City in 1955. He blew off his junior year of college and went and lived there for a year, drove a Volkswagen Beetle around. And since then, had always been very enamored with Mexico and specifically Oaxaca and Guadalajara and all that kind of country. And loved the La Carrera and all the stories behind that. He loved Lincolns and Plymouths and loved all the American cars that were competing. And so in the late 90s, he decided what better idea to have than to recreate Mexico in Nevada. And so he got a bunch of his buddies and Roadmasters and Capris and 300s and Chrysler Saratogas to all meet up in Reno or Carson City. And they did about, 1,000 miles around Nevada, staying in flea bag motels and driving around in the dirt. And we got some old photos and just looks like the most fun thing ever. So I know Randy would be the first person in on the entry list.
He's ready.
I want to do that.
And I can rattle off a few.
Just don't charge me 15 grand to go do that event. Drive around in circles. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Might be 15 bucks a day, actually.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Zach, you talk about cars to do Turato and a Carrera Panamericana type car in Europe would be cool. Something like that. Right? It would be interesting. Like a LaSalle. We had many years ago, I don't know if you guys remember this, we had a Carrera Panamericana prepped LaSalle that had like a NASCAR motor in it and everything.
Shark gray color.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It was like a 40 or 41 LaSalle coupe. That would be weird and kind of interesting and fast, obviously. like our guy Mike in his
Chris Studebaker. Dude, yeah, I was hoping the conversation was going there.
Yeah.
I've got a Hot Wheels of his car on my shelf in my office. That's a great car that we also sold on BAT and was ex Carrera.
Any of you guys run into any BAT cars on all your travels or BAT? You said you ran into some BAT sellers, Randy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't know if anywhere in the Tour Auto grid, but there were, I went to a couple dealers. You know, you found, that car went through BAT.
Sure.
I know this guy. Oh, yeah, he's bought three cars on BAT. It's funny to do that when you're far away. Obviously, that's probably a little more rare than you were at Airwater. I wonder how many BAT cars were there.
You know what was there was that big Porsche liveried transporter.
The red transporter. Uh-huh. Yeah,
that was there.
Yeah,
for sure.
That was at Lyft last year, too, I thought. Right?
Yeah, it was.
I saw it driving up. Somebody sent me a photo of it driving up the 5 or whatever, right?
Starting to show up a lot. Kind of like the Zac Brown.
Yeah, Hauler.
The Hauler, which I've seen quite a few times since it sold on BAT.
Bluebird, or what was that thing called?
I think it's a Bluebird. I mean, it's a period McLaren liveried motorhome.
Yeah.
Yep.
There was a guy in a 53 Fiat 1100 on the event last week. That was a BAT auction, early one, maybe fall 2015.
That's a Swig fame. Right?
Yeah, correct.
X-Swig.
Correct. There's a few X-Swig vehicles on the event.
That's so great.
Nice to see the Swig warranty living on and
out of warranty.
Successful.
Those cars are out
Sounds
of
like
warranty.
That Alpha 1900 is soon to be X-Wig also.
No, not yet. Man.
We wanted to bring it on the event to try to shore up plummeting 1900 values, but we didn't succeed in that.
You've only sent them further down the tubes with this podcast. Fantastic. I presume not strong BAT representation in Japan, Zach?
Not on the car front. Definitely on the people front.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think we see a lot more cars leaving that country.
Totally.
Becoming alumni and going back over there.
Including some of the cars that were at this Lufka Cult event, right? Like former Japan cars there, including our
JDM 964s.
Yeah, including our buddy Robbie. He had his pink 964 Carrera RS there. It was a cool event. Ran into definitely BAT people. Our power seller, Matt Crandall, was there. Saw him and talked to him for a while. Kim Ingram was on this podcast recently. He was on your event too, right, Howard?
He was not, but I had a social outing with him the evening before he went to Airwater. So that was always a good time.
Right. He had a 935 there, the new 935, the thing that's kind of GT2 based, which actually I was walking up to. I was like, is that an Audi R8 at a Porsche? It doesn't have headlights or anything. You know, it's got a completely smooth front end, which I guess is a.
Do you guys dig those? Would you guys track one of those? Those things they're big cars, aren't they? Thing seems like it's huge in person with all the.
It didn't seem that big. I thought it was at first one. I couldn't figure out what it was. There was another one there that had like a period look livery on it. I thought it was a Cayman at first. It's actually not as big as you would think.
It's just the size of a GT2 RS, I believe.
Yeah, but long with
the
long tail.
In my world, that's gigantic.
Yeah, totally.
I know.
I am kind of into them, honestly. Like I think it's interesting.
When you're on track, something like that, where you're probably not making a ton of aggressive passes in.
Yeah,
I know. Maybe you are.
I mean, it's Cam Ingram's car, but he was saying how fantastic it is. So, I think they're
I think it falls in the like, I'm glad that they made that camp, but it's not a car.
It's not for anything, right? Like, it's not really a race car, but it's not a street car either. So it's, a very expensive, cool looking open track car, basically.
Give me a cup car instead.
Yeah, I know.
Totally.
Oh, well, speaking of cup cars, this is actually maybe one for you, Alex.
Speaking of X-Wig again.
Yeah, I just got a service bill for my 996 cup car. It needed a new steering rack, among other things. So they put in a new rack and, of course, needed an alignment. How many hours was billed for an alignment on a 996 cup car?
Interesting. Escargot just aligned my 996 GT3 street car, so we can do a comparison. I'm going to guess 2.5.
They built a full day, 8 hours, which
to align the car,
which initially obviously jumped off the page to me. Then I asked around and apparently that's what there's a lot of bump steer, caster, camber, toe adjustments, and they got to adjust it, drop it down, tweak it, put it back up. So 8 hours.
Yikes. But maybe it's going to be super fast now.
It's so aligned now.
No, you don't have to worry about mixed pavement conditions.
It's hella aligned.
There's no transitional pavement. Issues will get to you.
That's half a second off your lap time. That alignment just got you a ton of speed.
No, come on. You guys know Howard well enough to know he's never going to drive it again. And in the title of his cup car listing, it's going to say recent alignment.
Recently aligned.
1999. Totally. Cup car.
5-star, $1,500 alignment. It's ready to go. It has never track straighter.
On and off the trailer.
Totally. Oh, man, that's hilarious. Zach at Lufka Cult, they had, because you were looking at one of these in Europe, they had a 996.1 GT3 that somebody had brought over in speed yellow.
Canada plates.
No, 99
maybe no plates.
99.
Are those 99? Oh, yeah, 99. You could bring 99? It over. Yeah, I wonder if it's an early import. You were showing me one of those that you were looking at in Europe, and I think it's the first one I've ever seen.
A yellow one in the Netherlands.
I don't think this was this because that one had like BBS wheels on it. And this
still
had just
there,
this.
So it's
okay,
not.
All right, but it was the same exact spec essentially. As
and
that car.
I like those; they look good.
Super cool looking car. I'm actually glad I had my car serviced. There's so much stock camber on the back of a 996 GT3, and maybe on your car too, that the inside of my rear tires, which I never look at, the outside had plenty of tread. The inside was through the metal cords.
Oh yikes.
I would have killed myself and my wife on the way to LA, almost certainly. So anyway, that was a good catch by those guys at Escargot. I'm glad I had it serviced there. And they also had it aligned, and it was not a 8-hour job for them to align that car. What else do you guys want to talk about?
Was there a highlight single car for you of the show?
They had...
Were there any 959s?
Yes, there were quite a few 959s. The one that you'll see in a lot of the photographs is a silver one that they put on one of those wood pallets that they do a lot since they did the event at at the lumberyard.
Was there a GT1?
I don't think there was. There weren't a lot of competition cars. There was one 935. There was the 908. There were a lot of career GTs, including like three black ones all in a row. And I wonder, we've sold so many of those. I wonder if one of them was ours. I was looking for, there's one that we had that was a Seinfeld car that had, I think, a gray interior. They had an all white section, super cool spread up there, including a white career GT, white 918 Spider, bunch of stuff that I hadn't seen was white. Anyway, cool event. I've been to a lot of those now.
Did it feel distinctively different from past events? Was there something in the air, water ethos?
I was telling Randy, it felt huge. Like, it was gigantic. There were, like, so many cars there. I mean, like, there was three other Speed Yellow 996 GT3s. So mine was one of, like, three or four that were there. There were a lot of, it was very, I guess this is kind of what people want in Porsche events. It was very color focused. So they had a lot of really wild colors. They had a 993. It was a wide body. It was either a Carrera 4S or a Turbo with in that kind of bright blue. It's like, almost like a Miami blue, but it was a 993 color. Maybe that came on.
I think that's Riviera for those.
I think that's right. And it had color matched wheels and color matched hardback seats. So they had a lot of stuff like that kind of on display and everyone looking at them. They had Gunter Works. They had Singer. They had the new crazy Singers. You know, all the stuff that all the people want to see.
It is a cool opportunity, or depending on your perspective, cool or not cool, to see like Riviera and Miami Blue. If you just look at a photo single, they're indistinguishable.
They're totally.
If you see them next to each other, you're like, oh, that one is ever so slightly different hue.
Everybody is painting everything or optioning it in Ruby. There's so many Ruby Stone cars, like new
Ruby Star
or whatever
Stone,
it is. And
Ruby Neo.
Right. So like, you know, GT4s and GT3s and GT3 RSs and GT, all of them paint to sample in that color, whatever it is, whatever you order the new one in. And then also an increasing number of old builds that are that color. Like, people are repainting old cars in that color. And I said, oh, Robbie, it used to be so rare. Is it hurting your back? He started groaning.
Were there any
pink Porsches?
Disappointing color combos, like a yellow over brown?
There were some really weird ones for sure. There was definitely some of the, I always think of it as ketchup and mustard, the McDonald's combo, yeah, you know, where it's yellow, the Viper
RT10. They
can put
all those together, like the disappointing corral. Like, it's like, it's like the PTS malfunction.
They ask you to, like, show up early to see.
Here's all
your
the
car
ones that didn't work out. Yeah, you're over in parking lot J with all the, like,
I would
clashing.
Love to see PTS by the blind collection.
PTSD.
Oh my gosh, category. Randy, there it is. There it is.
The corral can be led by those yellow raised dots that they have on sidewalks, so you
totally
just know how to guide yourself to
totally.
It.
Totally. Yeah, it was, you know, it was cool to see all the cars. It was cool to be out with them. It was jam packed. That was one of the other, you know, my wife even commented. She's like, you know, people say car culture is dead. She's like, there's like babies and young people. I mean, there had to have been thousands
of
people there.
How many people come
right out. And young people, and you know, people were really fired up and excited, and everyone's. There was a guy with Hasselblad, like on a tripod, you know, like steampunk cameras. And everyone's videoing, and people had, you know, cameras clipped to the bills of their hat and all that stuff. So, I mean, it was a lively event, and it was good to see that car culture is alive and well. Fun to be in LA, too.
I just love being on rallies and watching BAT auctions while reading the Root book and watching us listing and selling Vector M12s.
Oh, yeah.
Toyota Mega Cruisers and all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff makes me happy.
Way to bring it around, Howard. Bring it back in.
Where's the Vector guy? We got to get the Vector guy on here.
Totally.
If you're out there, contact us.
Interesting rig. Where did it sell to? That thing sold for what, 275 or something?
$300, I think, about, right?
But where'd it go? And where'd it come from? What's the story on that car?
That car
popped up and I was very pleased to see it.
Yeah, that's the late one. It's probably a better car. That's the one that's a Lamborghini. I don't know if Zach or Howard could school us on it. That's the Lamborghini based one, right?
But it was standard Miami Beach location, wasn't it?
I mean, I think the reputation was kind of like junky kit cars, right? But now they've kind of aged well and people are into them.
People are into them.
And people pay a ton of dough for them. It's a few generations. But anyways, I don't know if that was the first one we listed. Certainly the first one we've ever sold, but that was great. I was tracking that pretty closely. I think it was
the first one. We did an internal staff poll. What's the car you want to see on VAT the most? Vector was the winner.
Yeah, that's crazy.
In sold out of Florida, so no surprise there.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Of course it's Miami
That's
Beach.
Where every single one is.
Yeah, seeing that happen in the background and scrolling the BAT app or on your phone or whatever while you're cruising around with cars and showing people cars on BAT. I love all that. It's a good vibe. It's cool that we can go to all these crazy events, too, and people know it.
People trying to get some inside baseball on reserves for live cars on these events. They wander up to you at the gas station. It's like, yeah, I'm looking at this so-and-so. And what do you think it takes to get that?
I don't know. You're like, I don't know what it takes.
Howard's like, I sweep the floors there. I don't know.
Yeah, it starts with two, three.
Yeah. Not sure. Not sure on that one.
Fantastic. All right, gents, anything else?
I think we're good.
What a pleasure to do this with you guys every day. Maybe we can do another one later this week. Thanks for joining. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Feedback, questions, concerns, complaints department is podcast@bringatrailer.com. As always, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.